This episode of Football 301, it's the divisional round preview. All four games, Charles McDonald and I deep dives for every single one of them from Saturday afternoon Texans time to Sunday night Ravens Bills brouhaha. Ton of fun. Great weekend of football. Great show. See you guys in a sec. Hello and welcome back to Football 301. It's the divisional round preview for the NFL playoffs. Weekend two, one of the greatest weekends of the, not even just the football season, I would say the sports season. I love this weekend. Usually there's just a bunch of good games, bunch of good teams. Four games we're going to go over today, preview them all, deep dive on every single one of them. Things we like, things we don't like, advantages that teams can pick at, disadvantages that they might want to shy away from, all that type of stuff. We're going to break it down. To help me do that, as always for these preview shows, it's my guy, Mr. Verts, Charles McDonald. How are you doing today, Chuck?
I'm doing good. We're at the, what I like to say is like the best weekend in football, especially since the NFL has decided to dilute wild card weekend by throwing in a seventh seed. You can get some nonsense. We did see the Packers win last year, the seventh seed, not so much this year. So maybe this will be a thing where it's every once in a while. But I think once you trim the fat of wild card weekend, you get here. This is what we're all waiting for. I've got a couple of rematches, couple of big games that we're all looking forward to, and then we're at like the real march towards the Super Bowl. I'm really pumped for this weekend.
I know the rematch is always throws a little wrench in some of my breakdowns. I'm like, oh yeah, what did they do week four, which felt like 4 years ago? Some of these teams, I mean, just personnel changes, health. I mean, look at some of the defense, like the Bills defense has got several guys back. It's like a completely different game compared to the first time they met. Also, all these teams either won a playoff game or earned the number one seed. So you got a lot of good teams here, obviously, as we get further in the playoffs. Having said that, though, some bigger point spreads, which is kind of makes some of these games interesting. Of course, the Bills and Ravens is only a 1-point game, which we'll talk about. But to start, we'll get to the first game here on Saturday afternoon, which is Texans time. That's why I'm just going to keep calling Saturday afternoon games. It's Texans time. We're going to do Texans at Chiefs. Chiefs are 8.5-point favorites, and this is our first deep dive for this show. Oh, just wait. We're going to be a submarine wolf pack after the end of this show. U571. But like I said, this game, we talked about this a few weeks ago, that one game where the Texans went out to a huge lead and then the Chiefs came storming back a couple of years ago in the playoffs. But we have the Texans and Chiefs. We'll start off with Texans have the ball against this Chiefs defense. Charles, what are you focusing on here between these two teams?
I find this part to be like maybe the least compelling part of the game, only because the Chiefs defense, it's not the same unit I think we've gotten used to over the past couple of years. They didn't, you know, at least when you look at the data, they didn't ebb and flow as much as the offense did, but they were just kind of like a league average unit throughout the season. But even then, like a league average unit for this Texans offense, that can still pose some problems. You know, it's not fun. So you know, like this Chiefs defense, and this is kind of where it kind of gets to a whole discussion about like what would it take for the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl this year. It's like they have kind of like an average defense, but Chris Jones can absolutely just bomb a game plan for you. And that's kind of where I see this one maybe getting away from the Texans, because who in the Texans offensive line can block Chris Jones? Like, you know, because the one thing that the Chiefs will do is like they'll matchup hunt with Chris Jones, just find whoever's the worst offensive lineman. Dude, you're getting 50 reps of Chris Jones. I'm so sorry for you, but that's how it's going to have to be. And it's kind of like a choose your poison here with the Texans offensive line, because they've all been playing pretty poorly. I guess you're going to need like CJ Stroud and Joe Mixon to just kind of make some plays where they come above and survive what's coming towards them. But I think what's kind of frustrating about this matchup, if you're a Texans fan, is like this defense is not like an insurmountable foe as maybe it was when, over the past couple of years when they've been winning. They've they've fallen off a little bit. I think maybe the secondary, they missed whatever Snead brought last year. They're still trying to figure out, you know, what's next on that end. But it's just so hard when you can't block. It's so hard to play. It's so hard to play offense when you can't block. You got kind of lucky last week with the Chargers just deciding to shoot themselves in the foot over and over and over again. You can't really bank on that happening with Mahomes and the Chiefs. So I just don't know if they'll be able to just stay afloat and avoid enough negative plays to the point where they can actually score and knock off the Chiefs on the road. When we talk about the spread here, what was it? 8.5 It does feel high to me when I think about like where the Texas defense is and where they have advantages over the Chiefs offense, but man, it just seems like it's going to be tough to score. Right? Yeah.
I know. And that's score. And this defense for the Chiefs, like the quirk with them compared to a normal Spags defense is they're good against the run, which is like, you know, the Texans had a great run game last week, especially in the second half, but still, that to me, just the natural, if I just looked at it and what I've seen from these teams throughout the year, it's like, well, great for a bunch of third and longs, CJ Stroud. And that means third and longs against Steve Spagnuolo, which with your offensive line and with your shoddy pass protection rules, that's just a scary ask. And it's not like the Texans had a bye week to get ready for this. The Chiefs had a bye week to get ready for this. Really, two bye weeks, more or less.
Right.
And then, and they played each other in week 16, which, you know, they might show some things, but then you can play off of that. The entire year has been a struggle against the blitz for the, not just Stroud, but just the entire Texans offense, which we always just comes back to the offensive line. He's 21st knee paper dropback against the blitz, 24th in success rate. You know, he's going to go probably to Nico Collins' side. I would too. But the thing is, like, it's not just third and fourth downs either. Spags will bring blitzes on early downs, which has given the Texans issues the last two seasons. So it's just, we always come back to that term, natural answers, smooth answers, natural path, anything. For the Texans, it's like, what do you got? Like, what are you going to throw at this game? I'm glad you brought up Chris Jones too, kind of picking whoever the scab is, you know, whoever, you know, find it. That's what the basketball players used to say, find the mouse in the house. And they had Chris Jones, Next Gen Stats had a great stat here. Chris Jones aligned as an edge player on nearly 30% of his pass rushes. Highest rate for him since 2018 and the third highest rate among all defensive tackles since 2018. So that is just because he can win anywhere. So let's just, all right, who's the weakest blocker? Okay, here. To me, it would probably be in the interior, but they can kind of just pick where they want to go against this Texans offense. So to me, it's just kind of how what the Texans had to do last week. Find the big plays. Like that's what you have to do. They have to find some big plays. I'm also scared that Spags has had great success against Shanahan offenses over his career. Last year in the Super Bowl, there's been plenty of instances because what these offenses like do, a lot of condensed splits. And so what Spags likes to do is go, all right, I'm going to blitz your corners. Have fun with those condensed splits. I'm just going to keep blitzing corners and your protection's not going to pick it up because it's a rule-breaking blitz that he likes to bring. So that has me worried as well. Like again, so it's all the things the Texans want to do or they're good at or not good at a lot this year, but mostly bad at. The Chiefs have answers to like make it bad, to keep it bad against them. So I think it's going to come down to exactly how Stroud in that run game, they have to hit a couple runs. It's hard. This defense doesn't let up a lot of explosive runs, but Stroud and Nico Collins got to be on their game again and not have four turnovers. That'll help as well, yeah. Or whatever it was. John Metchie, hold on to the ball. You know, don't have those turnovers, but that's what they have to do, especially when you're this big of underdogs and you kind of have a lot of disadvantages on this side of the ball.
Yeah, the first game, I went back and, you know, sped through the first game again to play a couple weeks ago because the final score was closer than I remembered in my head because when I was watching it live, I just remembered it felt like the Texans couldn't do anything. And it was kind of a tale of two halves. Like the first half, they were able to move the ball pretty well. But on the second half, they had four drives. The first one was a touchdown, four plays for 50 yards. Then they went three plays, 1 yard punt, 14 plays, 50 yards for a field goal, and then three plays, minus 13 yards, and the game was over. So I was like, man, that's what I remembered. I remember them getting their tails kicked in the second half. He scored a touchdown, and then it took you a million plays to gain like 60 yards-ish. Actually, less than that because you lost 13 yards in the last drive. I kind of feel like that's what this is going to look like for this game, especially with a week to prepare. I know it's a meme, but the Andy off a bye, but dude, Andy Reid, this staff off a bye with the divisional on the line, like a trip to the Super Bowl basically on the line here. I just kind of think they pummel them and just exploit the weaknesses.
Andy Reid's only had a couple losses with Mahomes after a bye. This is his thing, his bye week. And they've had a lot of bye weeks into the playoffs. So you can add to that stat. And this is what Andy Reid does. They just win games. And Spags is part of that too. He's part of this vet coaching staff that's adjust throughout the playoffs. And the thing with Spags before last year, the defense was awesome. Top five defense. The year before that, after the bye week, they became a good offense or a good defense. This year, they're more like that, maybe that 2 year ago, second half defense where it's pretty good. It's not overwhelming, but it's pretty good. Is that like hit what always the thing was just get to the playoffs and let Spags work his magic. Meaning he had some of the best week to week game plans. He's one of the best game planners ever, like NFL assistant coach history. Some of his game plans are in the freaking Hall of Fame because of what they've done. This is what he does, and now he has a bye week. And it's going against an offense that he always has answers against. So it's kind of like, it's just tough sledding. And they might have their cornerback, Jalen Watson back.
Jalen Watson.
So he might be back. So again, they just have better things. They're healthier overall. Chris Jones got injured in that week 16 game. He's got 3 weeks basically to rest. So yeah, just a lot. Shaq Mason also did not participate in practice. So it's just like, oh God, it's like, I see maybe how this is going to go. I know. Yeah. So
I was about to say, you know, last week, I think if you're a Texas fan, last week was kind of encouraging because CJ Stroud did a better job of surviving the onslaught than he had, you know, in recent weeks. Because
good
we all
scrambles.
Know he, right. We all know he's capable of it. I think it just got to a point maybe where it's too much after a while. You become a little discombobulated and you're like, I'm punch drunk, I'm tired, I don't really know what's going on. But last week was good. So maybe if he has one of those games again and you avoid the ugly interception, you can stay alive. There's always that chance with him, but man, it seems tough. It seems tough.
It's just tough. If they had a couple more receivers like they were supposed to, it may be okay. Maybe they could do that. But yeah, it comes down to the offensive line. You got to win in the trenches, and Spags is going to test it, and I think they have the advantage. On the other side of the ball, so for Yahoo this week, my angle for the article to preview all these games was, how can an upset happen? How can I build an upset? One of the games is only a one-point spread, but the other games all being six or more, trying to find some stuff. And here, it was with the Chiefs offense, Texans defense, what I came to, and I think you'd probably agree with this because it's kind of the most obvious, is the Texans D-line. They got to win. Like, the great neutralizer in football is a good pass rush, and I'll always emphasize that, especially in the playoffs. And the Chiefs have a little conundrum. They have, do they keep Joe Tooney out at left tackle and put Mike Caliendo, no relation to Frank? Do they put him?
Thank God.
He has more. Mike Caliendo has more career receiving yards, 5. Then career starts, 3. He's a guard. That blows my mind. And he's about maybe possibly starting this game. Isn't that funny? He has 5 receiving yards in his career as a guard. He has 3 starts. This was the pairing that they played in week 16. Tooney allowed 7 one-on-one pressures. Caliendo allowed 3. Tooney's an excellent guard, all pro guard. He's actually pretty good at tackle. He can do it. But you don't want him against Will Anderson, Danielle Hunter for 30-plus dropbacks. That's scary. That's just not what you paid him to do. Behind door number 2 is DJ Humphreys, who has been in a walking boot essentially since he's arrived in Kansas City and did not look great in week 18 against the Broncos. Holy shit. Did you watch that?
No, I remember watching because I was like, who the hell is that? And I was like, DJ Humphreys.
Yes, I know. That's what I did. I thought it was some practice squad guy that maybe they were getting some reps for. No,
same.
That's the guy that they want to start at left tackle for him in the playoffs. So they have a conundrum. Do they go Humphreys at left tackle, Tooney at left guard, or do they go Tooney at left tackle and Caliendo at left guard, sandwiched between Creed Humphrey and Tooney? So what would you go for? Like, would you go Humphreys at left tackle or Tooney at left tackle?
I don't, does it matter? I'd probably try to go with Tooney at left tackle. Or I mean, sorry, Tooney at left guard, just because.
Yeah. Okay. Because that's why, man,
I don't know if I can. I just don't think you can start someone with that little experience, like in this spot. It's just a little bit. It's a little too far, right? It's a little too far. You know, a very inspired DeNico Autry this year. I think that's just a recipe for disaster. But like also DJ Humphries, based on what he looked like in week 18, putting him up against Daniil Hunter, Will Anderson, that seems like an absolute disaster too. So you're probably doomed.
Pick your poison. But
at least DJ Humphries, like, he was good enough to get paid for 8 years by Arizona in relative anonymity. So yeah. I guess you go with
the NPC left tackle.
Right. The NPC left tackle. Yeah.
He was like the league average left tackle for years. Like,
they just kept paying him. It's great.
They just kept paying him and no one had an opinion on him. And now everyone just knows there's no offensive tackle box score stats. So they just see games started. They're like, oh, he has to be good.
pretty good.
So this is what I kind of wrote about, and I kind of came to the same conclusion. I was like, all right, Humphries hasn't started a bunch this year. Has barely been playing. But if you remember what the Texans were doing to the Chargers O-line last week, where they kept doing twists on the inside because the Chargers' weakness was on the inside. I don't want Caliendo eating those over and over and over. I'd much rather have Tooney and Humphries shoring up the middle. Okay, we can get chip help for DJ Humphries. Chiefs hate giving chip help, but I think you have to this week. But I think that's a better plan, at least in my head. I'm not paid like Andy Heck and Andy Reid, but that's what I went with. And the Texans have the second, they have the second highest team pressure rate. Hunter and Anderson Jr. are in the top 10 individually. So again, they can do a lot of damage here. The other guy I want to bring up is Foley Fatukasi, former Jet, I believe.
Yeah, that was my guy. When I covered him. He was cool.
And then the Jags signed him, and I actually kind of liked that signing. Then really kind of was indifferent in Jacksonville, but he's been actually huge for the Texans. And this is what we always talk about, is that the Texans D-line is a little light in the ass, and they want to get upfield, and offenses can trap them. Fatukasi actually helps that out because he's a big body.
Foley did when he was here, because that was when they had the Greg Williams defense, where basically the entire defense was like, hold the line, and Jamal Adams is just going to make plays, you know, everywhere else. You guys are going to block for Jamal Adams, basically, was the defense. And he did a really good job at back. That. Yeah.
He did. Well, this is what we talk about with the Vikings, is that they need a Foley. They need a guy to eat blocks in the middle, because it cleans up everything else. But there's some stats that back this up, which is always nice. Without Foley on the field on early downs this season, the Texans defense ranked 20th in early down rushing success rate allowed and 10th in EPA per rush allowed. So, you know, middle of pack EPA, somewhere around there. But when he's on the field, they ranked 2nd in success rate and 1st in EPA per rush allowed. So again, there's some noise with that, but it paints the general picture, like how much of an impact he makes against the run. They're a little worse against the pass, though, when he's on the field. So that's the trade-off that you have with it. Is there any other sides that you think that maybe this Texans defense can make it tough on the Chiefs offense, maybe outside the pass rush?
Well, the way that I was looking at it, and I guess I kind of ended up writing something similar-ish to you, where it was like, are the Texans the best bad team or the worst good team in the NFL? I think they're the worst bad team.
The worst. Oh, you want to give worst good team?
Worst good team, because I started looking at it and I started thinking about it with the Chiefs, because it does kind of feel like they're both like slopping it up, I guess, especially in the back half of the season. But one area that I do feel like the Texans defense versus the Chiefs offense has a big advantage, just like in terms of personnel, it's like the overall passing game, kind of. Because even if you're going to, we already talk about the pass rush and, you know, the edges and D'Amico Autry versus wherever their offensive line is right now. But dude, we're talking about like Derek Stingley, where the way Kamari Lazar has played recently, they match up really well talent wise against the Chiefs wide receivers. You know, this isn't like the game we were talking about before where you're up 24-0 and then, oh, here comes Tyreek Hill and here comes Sammy Watkins and here comes, you know, all these other guys. This is a much less scary group than that. And I think even at this point in his career, I feel like you could say our plan in the game is we're going to put Derek Stingley on DeAndre Hopkins, and you could feel good about that plan. Because the way that Derek Stingley's playing, he's just straight locked down. The ball skills are out of this world. He's tackling great in the open field. I mean, I think that's one area where it could get tight, because things are just moving a little faster for the Texans than they have been for the Chiefs offense in the passing game. But still got 15 back there, you know? Like,
that's the thing.
That's the thing.
Who am I betting on?
Who am I betting on here? Right. So the 8.5-point spread, it feels like a lot to me when I just start like manning up talent to talent, Chiefs offense, Texas defense. But they did win by 8 points last time, and they still have Patrick Mahomes, who I can't bring myself to doubt in a playoff game. I don't know.
It's like the Texans are trying to win as many one-on-ones as possible. They go man coverage, they rush five or rush four, and they just go, we have enough dudes, and they do. They have two excellent pass rushers, an all-pro corner in Stingley, and then Lassiter. Shoot, oh my God. Like, even his metrics are amazing. Some of his metrics are better than Stingley, and they're very... And it's great because you can isolate theirs because they've run so much man coverage. So actually the metrics work, like, because there's not as much noise. And Stingley's always on the left. Defense is left. Lassiter's always on the defense's right. So I can split it that way as well. Like, it's kind of nice. And like, he holds up. He had awesome game last week, obviously, with the pick and the PBU on third down. But yeah, I just, they're going to play man coverage. Mahomes has been great against man coverage this year. It's just who wins. I would say their last matchup, the Chiefs threw out every man beater that you can think of on passing downs, and it was working. And now Andy Reid's got some time to take it off. So I do think the Texans have a personnel advantage, which is so crazy for me to say. I really do. If you just looked up, break down all 11, not to say the Chiefs don't have a lot of talent. Look at their offensive line too. But it's just that the Texans actually have some juice. But it's Mahomes. It's Andy Reid with a bye week. They've already shown that they can beat this. Mahomes is 9 of 11 on scrambles against cover one being successful. Like, there's just the answers that they have. So, I think they might be a little tight just because what the Texans have, but I do think the Chiefs pull this off. Do you have a similar prediction?
Yep. Chiefs win, Texans cover. That's what I'm going to do.
Okay, that's kind of what I'm going with, too. Also, Lassiter has got a great nickname, the Locksmith, which just don't think about it too hard. Don't think about it too hard, but it's a great nickname to say for a corner, I think. All right, let's move on to our next Saturday game, which is Commanders at Lions. Lions are 9.5-point home favorites, and this is our next deep dive. I love this bit. Like I said, this is almost a 10-point spread, 9.5, greater than a touchdown. How about I put it that way? This is going to be at Ford Field. Ford Field will be rocking Saturday night. We'll start with the Commanders offense, Lions defense, because I think that's going to be a really, really interesting side of the ball. Charles, what are you focusing on with this side? The other side, I have notes, but they're a little one-sided. This side of the ball, Chuck, Commanders offense, Lions defense, what are you focusing on?
Jaden Daniels again.
Yeah.
because that's the juice that's going to get the Commanders wherever they're trying to go this season. I think the Week 18 game for the Lions should give you a lot of confidence. Maybe this Sam Darnold performing against the Rams gives you some pause that it was, you know, just Sam.
Where
it was trending. But I do think, like, if you can walk into a Week 18, gotta have it game against Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, and what the Vikings have been all season, and kind of shut that down, you should feel better about what happened like the previous 4 weeks to that, where you were just losing bodies and getting decimated. So I say that because the Commanders on first and second down, especially running this past week against Tampa Bay, they were awful. They had like a 21% success rate on the ground on first and second down, which is why when you see them run 20 plays on third and fourth down, that's not a good thing. It's not necessarily a good thing you've run 20 plays on third and fourth down, because it means you're not really getting anywhere on first and second down. So you're living in these high leverage one sample plays like all game long. Now, they did get a first down on 55% of those plays, but
they're also like one of the best offenses at it ever.
Ever, right. But again, like, if I'm the Lions, I'm trying to replicate that game plan to a degree, because if you're going to run the ball 29 times the first and second down, and they got 72 yards on those runs last week, like, you're going nowhere, less than 3 yards per carry. I would say let's try and see if we can do that again. And if they beat us on third and fourth down, then they beat us on third and fourth down. But if, as long as we can get them to those spots, then you should feel good about your chances to, you know, holding the under like 24, 28, because it's just, it's really just a hard way to play these football games where every single drive you run into high leverage downs and you got to have it every single time. So I don't know what like your plan is for the Jaden scrambles and some of the stuff where Jalen buys time behind the pocket and Taylor finds someone like in the middle of the field. I don't know if you want to spy. I don't know if you want to play less man coverage than you do as a man coverage heavy team. But if you can just get the third and fourth down, I think that that's a win. What happens after that, the Commanders have shown that's up to God. God's kind of on their side. But you can still smother this team on first and second down. Yeah.
They really are. They got the kiss this season. It matters, though, because that Commanders offense is, I mean, honestly, one of the best we've seen. And a lot of that is because Jaden's running ability. He's accurate underneath. He kind of stays calm in it. But the Lions are first in success rate on third and fourth down this season, and third in EPA per play. So it's a great strength on strength thing here, even if we do say that's there's volatility with late downs. And that's what Charles and I have talked about a few times. But there just is. And really the biggest staple is having an awesome quarterback for third and fourth down. That's why the Bills and Chiefs are usually good at it. Maybe Daniels is that reason for it. He is a little bit this season. We'll see if he can sustain, because obviously that the Lions are going to be on top of it. But I really, again, I was trying to find angles for the Commanders here because that Lions defense is good. Like, it still has held up even with injuries. Their first in pressure rate since they traded for Za'Darius Smith, which is something I didn't even realize. They don't close on a lot of sacks. I think they're like 29th in sacks since week 11, but they get a lot of knockdowns. So they're just a second late. Going against Jane Daniels, though, Daniels can get away from those. Like, maybe that's interesting to
me. Yeah.
But I was finding
old man pass rush versus Jaden Daniels.
We'll see. Yeah. Bunch of barroom brawlers.
Right.
against a sleek Porsche. But I actually found something here. And this was fun for me dipping through this because I couldn't really. I was like, man, could they stop the run? Well, the Lions are good against the run. Okay, could they do this? Well, the Lions are good against that too. Tempo, which the Commanders run under Cliff Kingsbury. They're first in no huddle. Outside 2 minutes and inside 2 minutes, no matter how you look at it. So I looked at the Lions. How are you against tempo? How are you against no huddle? Bad is the answer. The Lions are 31st in success rate against no huddle plays outside 2 minutes, 26th in EPA per play, 31st against the run success rate, 31st in EPA per rush, 28th in dropback success rate, 25th in EPA per dropback. And again, like I said, Commanders are first in no huddle. This is what Cliff Kingsbury loves to do. I think crank that up even more. They're like at 45-ish% no huddle outside 2 minutes, 80%. Yeah, I know. I would say go 45%,
man.
I know that half the plays are no huddle. It's obscene. Like, it really is. That's crazy. We don't see that in the NFL. Usually like 20% is crazy.
Yeah.
And I'd say go full on Chip Kelly blur. And just go no huddle every play. And maybe they see this the same thing too, and maybe they lean into it. But I think that's just an angle. You keep them out of, you know, some of the funky pressures that the Lions will bring, keep them out of some maybe exotic calls, keep it really simple, which is why they go no huddle in the first place. Again, though, Lions have a bye week. And Eric Glenn has shown that he's got some stuff in his back pocket. I made a whole big deal this entire season about the whole base defense, the nickel or to 11 personnel and all that. And then week 18, Aaron Glenn goes, I'm going to run nickel to base. Alex Anzalone's back, but I'm actually going to go 5 DBs. So that was really cool because they were doing it for Justin Jefferson. There's other reasons. I won't get into it here. But it was kind of cool that he just subverted his entire week 1 through week 17 tendency. And then week 18 just threw it out the window and went, no, we're doing the opposite this game. That's if you want to see why the Vikings struggled a little bit, is because they were like, what the is this? wait, I just prepped for 17 games against this other look, and then you got the linebacker back, so obviously you're gonna run base, right? And nope, Aaron Glenn went, nope, we're running nickel. And I just thought that was so cool to like just kind of switch that up. So again, they got more in their bag. The other angle I found, running back targets. Okay, Lions, worst defense in the NFL against running back targets. 30th in EPA per dropback, 32nd in yards per play, over 8 yards per play, 30th in EPA per dropback, 28th in dropback success rate. Remember Ty Johnson with the Bills catching a couple. Austin Eckler as a receiver this year, 2nd in yards per route run amongst 37 running backs for 200 or more routes, 2nd in yards per target, and 1st in explosive receptions per route. Maybe an Austin Eckler game. That was my other angle for this, but that's kind of what I came down to was tempo, throwing to the running back, and Jaden Daniels run around a little bit, because I think that's how you're going to have to attack this Lions, very good Lions defense, I should say.
If you can get maybe some of these linebackers in space, maybe you can make something happen. But as we're about to talk about, it just seems like you're going to have to do a whole lot here.
Yes, I know. The other thing was slot targets, but I won't even get to that. All right, well, we'll go on the other side of the ball, because this is this is definitely not a strength on strength. this is a strength on glaring weakness. I don't even know where you want to start. You want to start with man coverage? Or do you want to start with defending the run? But we'll go Lions offense, Commanders defense, wherever you want to go with this, Chuck. What are you checking out first?
It's one of those things where, what the Commanders have done on defense. And it's certainly better than the first half, right? They've definitely improved on defense. You know, some of the metrics have risen to where they're 9th in success point on offense since week 10. It's pretty good. This is something so different than what you see from every other offense. It's like, I don't want to just throw out everything I think about the Commanders defense out the window and just go Ben Johnson versus this defensive style. Like they're going to shred them. Like last year we saw Jordan Love and the Packers, like they just spammed crossers basically and score like 50 points. And That was it. And this is like a supercharged version of that offense, where they can run the ball, they can do play action, they can drop back pass, they can pass versus a blitz. I mean, it just doesn't really matter what you throw at them. They've figured out an answer for everything. And I know that even the Commanders' defensive line, they've played a little bit better recently, but this is a different beast. It just is. So I know, like, I started looking at some of the numbers, and like there are positive trends for the Commanders defense. I just don't know if I care. That's right. That's the thing.
Especially after a bye week. That's the thing. After a bye week, it's not just it's not like a week 12 game where it's like you can catch them, you know, like, or something like it's after a bye week. And I know Ben Johnson's taken 14 interviews and Aaron Glenn's taken interviews. And that does matter, that you see this happen sometimes when guys are going to get a bunch of interviews. I wish I could find the, like have the balls to kind of go like, no, they could do this. It's just every way I parsed it, eye test this match. This isn't luck. This is like actual eye test. And then you look at the stats and you're like, yeah, of course, Jared Goff has generated 100 passing EPA against man coverage this season. Jalen Hurts is 2nd at 62 EPA.
100,
like 0.2. Joe Burrow's in 3rd at 49. And Jared Goff is 21st in attempts. And he's 1st in total EPA against man. 1st in EPA per drawback, obviously. 1st in success rate. 59% success rate against man. League average is 44%. And 71.3% completion percentage. If you like QB rating, old school QB rating, Jared Goff's QB rating against man coverage is 138.8. It's obscene what they do against man coverage. Screens, play action, drop back, like anything. And then they can pound the rock. And David Montgomery's back because he got cleared from his 5th doctor.
We'll see if that's a good idea for him in like 2026, you know.
Yeah, I know. At least he got that extension. At least he got paid before this. So Commanders are 4th in man coverage. You know, even with Mike Sanders still bumping out to the outside, they're going to love to run man coverage. That's what you were referring to with Jordan Love against that Cowboys defense last year at Dan Quinn. DQ kind of does what he does, and he wants guys to play fast so he doesn't overcomplicate the stuff. But when you're going against this type of offense with the sniper at offensive play caller and Ben Johnson, it's just like, okay, well, you got to change up something. Maybe they catch him with a turnover. Maybe they catch him with some pressure. Maybe Kevin Zeitler being out allows the defensive tackles to get after him. Maybe that's one way they can do it. But just looking at recent history, it's just hard to find an angle here. But you never know. It's the NFL. That's how it goes. Any given Sunday or Saturday or Monday if it's wild card weekend. Predictions for this game. Like I said, the top Lions are 9-point favorites.
Lions win and cover.
I am also going Lions win and cover, but I do think it's going to be points. I do think the Commanders will get some points there, but
well, like, you know, like 34 to 20, something like that.
That sounds about right. Yeah. Somewhere around there. But I think it's gonna be close for the first half, but then Lions pull away. All right. That will be it for the Saturday games. We're going to take a quick break and then jump into Sunday of divisional round playoffs. All right, we are back. Going on to Sunday. We got Rams at Eagles. Eagles are 6-point favorites at home. And again, this is another deep dive. We'll start with the Rams offense against the Eagles defense. Both top units, efficiency-wise, explosive play-wise. Maybe not explosive play-wise because the Rams aren't up there that high. But the Eagles defense is for sure one of the best units in the league. Rams offense can score points in a unique way. What are you focusing on this side of the ball, Charles?
I think that the first game that was played between these teams is a good reference for, I think, how this game is going to go. And I even went back and I sped through some of the conversation we had about after that game.
After the Rams Eagles game, watching the tape.
Yeah, a little bit, because I was sitting there watching this game. I was like, I've had all of these thoughts before. Let me
where
have I thought this before? Oh, on the damn show. It was like, so you go back to that game. The Rams actually finished with a higher success rate in that game than the Eagles, that they lost 37 to 20, 50% to 45%. They're both even in passing success rate. The Rams actually had a higher rushing success rate, 53% to 45%. But the Eagles averaged 7 yards per play to the Rams, 4.9 yards per play. So it's like, yeah, we'll... The Rams, like, I think especially gets a defense this talented and where they are right now, which is certainly better than where they were at the start of the season, is you're probably going to be nickel and diming maybe a little bit more than you would like just due to the overall talent. But the other side, and they can do nickel and diming stuff. Like, they obviously can. But the other side can get home runs, like when they feel like it, kind of. And that's just, it's so hard to counteract that when, you know, you're grinding it out and you're getting down the field and doing the intricate play designs and punching to the end zone. Then the other team goes, inside zone, Saquon Barkley, 70 yard touchdown. It's like, okay, well, damn. Like, all right, double back move at it.
Double move to AJ Brown, 45 yard touchdown. All right.
Oh, you're a man. Let's just run a little crosser to Devonta Smith and we'll, yeah. So that's where the Eagles get you, man. It's like, because we've talked about, you know, this marriage between Jalen Hurts and Kellen Moore, and how's it going to mesh? And it ends up kind of looking the exact same. But you've kind of nailed, like, your offensive line development recently. You have Saquon Barkley, you have AJ Brown, you have Devonta Smith. You're going to score a lot of points. Like, it doesn't really matter who's calling plays or who is in the backfield. Like, as we've talked about before a million times this season, if you can block, you have a chance. If you can block for Saquon Barkley, you have a great chance. If you can block for Saquon Barkley and Devonta Smith and AJ Brown, you're going to win a whole lot of football games. And it's funny because you watched the Bucs game last week, and they're not getting a whole lot out of the passing game. Or not the Bucs game, the Packers game, excuse me. They're not getting a whole lot out of the passing game, but the surrounding pieces are so damn good that you still always have, you know, options on where to go. Even you think about the oh my God, the tight end, I'm blanking on his name, that had the big catch and the touchdown. Goddard, right. You look at that play, and the fact that you could just dump it off and he theoretically can make something like that happen, that's crazy. So I think that that's just where the Eagles, you know, it's not the most complicated thing, but you just kind of spam talent, you add enough 90-plus overall players to your team, and you can get to the NFC Championship game, and that's kind of where I see this one going. But it was a fun matchup last time, like watching, you know, even some of the like the chess match between Fangio and McVay, just, you know, war of attrition by the end. You just weren't really that close.
That I know. And again, I was trying to find upset angles for here. So I was like, the first one, I was like, oh, Rams using a bunch of two tight ends lately. Oh, all right. More than McVay has in like 5 years. All right. Eagles defense because this is usually how you get these defenses. Get them in base. All right, make them match base. They have to trot out the big boys. They probably suck at it. Nope, they're really good. They're really good out of base. But it is some funny splits there, is that when they are in big boys and base defense, they're really good against, this is like traditional. It's like, it's exactly what you think. If you trot out big defenders, what do you think you're good against? The run. What are you poor against? The pass. Going in nickel, if I want to match 12 personnel with nickel with five DBs, what are you bad against? The run. What are you good against? The pass. And sure enough, that's what the Eagles are. They're like a top five defense out of base defending the run, but they're not that good against the pass. And at the first drive against the Vikings last week, the Rams ran two or more tight ends on a majority of the plays. And that stuck out to me. And I sure enough looked it up. The Rams have used 12 personnel 15.5% of their plays this year, almost triple their rate last year and the highest since 2020 for them. And I just think that's what they lean towards, is trying to get it's the classic get big bodies and try and gash them through the air. And if they match light bodies, then we'll pound the rock on them. And because they're 15th in rushing success rate defending nickel against base. So that's what McVay loves to do. He loves basing his calls off personnel, loves packaging plays together based off the coverage looks. Fangio kind of declares what they're going to do. And again, that's what's so frustrating for an offense. You know literally what you're about to get. You still can't beat it. We'll see on a repeat matchup what new kind of wrinkles they throw in here. I was even trying to find like, oh, how are they against under center runs? Because the Rams will run under center a bunch. And this is actually where I found maybe an angle here. The Eagles were bottom 10 in yards per rush. They're middle of the pack, rushing success rate allowed against under center runs. Rams are good at duo. Eagles, mediocre against duo. So there's like some things that the Rams can pick at, but it's not like easy. It's not like this last game where the Commanders are 32nd, they're 32nd, they're 30th. It's like, no, they're 15th. So they're still pretty okay at it, you know, but it's just that it's hard to find an angle, but that's why McVay gets paid the big bucks. That's why McVay is really good. But you're going against Fangio, going against a top tier defense. But I thought that was maybe one angle, maybe some two tight end looks to maybe just make the Eagles declare what they want to stop and then do the other thing. That would maybe be a path I could see here. The other side of the ball, like you said, survive the run game. Like that's the goal to beat the Eagles this year. Run two high safeties, which the Rams will do. They do split safeties a bunch. Okay, yeah, the Rams use split safety at 10th highest rate, and then Hurts against split safety is like, eh. He's like 15th in EPA, 18th in success rate. He has the highest scramble rate in the NFL against two high because he can't find an answer. And I looked at the EPA, and the EPA breakdown on it is pretty telling. So against two high, Jalen Hurts has 15 EPA generated on passes, on just throws. He has 17 EPA generated on scrambles. So he's gotten more out of a runner than a thrower against two high. He's lost 22 EPA on sacks against two high because he's holding on to the ball for so long. Against this defense, which has a good pass rush, but your offense still has an advantage because you have such a good offensive line, maybe getting Hurts to hold on to the ball. Jared Verse and Fisk and all those guys, Byron Young and Kobe Turner, they play really hard and they'll play all 5 seconds, 6 seconds, how long Hurts is going to hold on to the ball. That was the one angle where I could see it's like, okay, split safeties, get Hurts to hold on the ball, survive the run, and then maybe you got something there. But it's easier said than done because then I was like, okay, that's the path. All right, let's look at the stats on this. All right, who's the worst defense in the NFL against extended passes, 4 seconds or more? The Rams, because their DBs can't hold up. And it's just hard. Imagine being a defensive coordinator against this, but Rams are 32nd success rate on passes that take 4 or more seconds. They're 32nd in yards per attempt, 9.2. The league average is 6.5. Jalen Hurts has the highest rate of passes that have taken 4 or more seconds, almost double the league average. Rams have forced 5 interceptions on these though. So that is one interesting aspect of this, but they got to get home. They got to survive the run. And really that's the best way for them to have a chance. It's easier said than done because what this Eagles offense can throw at you.
Yeah. It does feel like the Rams kind of on both sides of the ball. And I guess that's why we all respect like their coaching staff so much. It feels like they're kind of maxed out. Like what's been given to them this year?
Oh, you should be doing this. It's like, no, I get why you did that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You know, cause last week, with the Vikings game, I was like, yeah, Sam might stink it up, or they might have some problems on O-line. But like, man, Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, first, those were DBs. Like, maybe you got a chance. And they brought it to him for the whole game. So you at least know, like, if you're a Rams fan, you're going to get most likely what the best possible outcome is for this team. But, you know, I could just see you kind of get stiff-armed a little bit by a team that's got some more dudes than you.
You get Goddarded.
Yeah, Goddarded. Yeah, blue chipped.
Yeah. Yeah, blue chipped. Yeah, Goddard used a DB like a freaking human meat shield. I would say for Rams fans, if you see Jalen Hurts throw two or three balls outside the pocket in the first quarter, that's good. That means things are going okay. If all of Hurts's throws are happening from in the pocket, you're torched. Like, that's how I feel about this game. If he is not flushed out of the pocket and getting into like, oh, wait to find something mode, it's going to be a long day. But Chris Shula has done a great job. He's got some great game plans so far. So I the Rams defensive coordinator. So I'm curious what they throw at this, because it's a big ask.
This reminds me, like, some of my friends that listen to this show when a game, especially a college football game or something, starts to get a little out of hand early on, just a bag of blue Doritos gets sent to the chat. You got blue chipped. And
you got blue chipped. I like that. Yeah. Picture blue chipped Doritos, and then there's a sound thing, and it's the PS5 turning on.
Yep. Ding.
Eagles, 6-point home favorites. Predictions for the game, Charles?
I'm going to take the Eagles to win and cover, but I don't necessarily think that the Eagles winning by more than 6.5 points means it was a bad game.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I think the Eagles win this, but I'm not saying the Rams have no shot. It's like, obviously, anything happens in the NFL. I think the Rams, it's going to come down to that opening drive and whether they can get a nice game script. I'm going to go with the Eagles. I'm not sure if they cover. I'll say it's under 6, but I'll say it's an Eagles win. I mean, all these games I'm excited for, but that's a fun one. It's just a lot of fun. Styles makes fights in that game. But we're going to take our last break and then get to Bills and Ravens. All right, we are back. Last game here. This is the Sunday evening game. Ravens, 1-point favorites at the Bills. Are you going to this one?
No, I'm staying home this weekend. I got to go to Dallas next weekend for a Shrine Game stuff. So
Shrine Game.
Yeah,
staying home this weekend. Sanders game, basically. Yeah. Might be talking to the new Cowboys head coach there.
I wonder why I'm going to Dallas.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Deion and Shakur are going to be there now all of a sudden.
Sorry about that.
Yeah. The microscope next weekend is going to be on the Shrine Game. And the AFC Championship game, Deion and Shakur running around Dallas will be just as big of a story.
Run around the star. Yeah, that's exactly how that game's going to go. But no, this is going to be a fun one. I know for my upset thing, I was like, I'm just throwing this game in here too. It's a 1-point spread. Ravens, 1-point favorites at Buffalo. And this is our last deep dive of the show. Oh, no. Hoss fight. No, I meant to say Hoss fight, not deep dive. That's our Hoss fight, but whatever. It's same thing. Hoss fight, deep dive. I think what would be our slop watch? Chiefs Texans, I guess, is slop watch for this week.
Slop watch for sure.
All right. This is fun, though. You got the two all pro quarterbacks, first and second team, probably the top two MVP vote getters. Lamar's for winning that generally if you just follow the all pro votes. But watching this game, Chuck, we'll go Ravens offense, Bills defense. What are you checking out? Just a very, very fun game.
Demolition derby, baby. Yeah. That's what I'm here for. Talked about it last week. We talked about it after when we did our weekend recap the other day. But to me, that game on Saturday for the Ravens from a game plan perspective, it felt like a statement to the rest of the AFC. Hey, we're running the goddamn ball. Okay. And it's not a bad plan, because throughout the whole past few days, where, you know, when I've peeped over to just see what people are talking about, there's still been a little bit of ire about what the Steelers did game plan wise against the Ravens. And I'm just like, man, I think you're missing the point here of what actually matters. The fact is, you have two Hall of Fame players in their prime, and doesn't really matter what you call. Like, you're just screwed. So you know, because there people were saying, they were just crashing against Derrick Henry and, you know, trying to scrape over and leave a linebacker for Lamar Jackson. I'm like yeah, you get on the whiteboard and you draw it up. That it looks fine until a linebacker has to tackle Lamar Jackson in practice, like in, you know, not in theory, in practice during a playoff game in the open field. It's really hard to do. It's like that's what the Ravens have kind of done to the run defense that they face. Like, you can draw it up however you want, but we have Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson, and that's the equalizer. And I think that what Derrick Henry has done to this offense, that they didn't quite have last year with Gus Edwards, even though they were a good running team. But like, the truth is, as long as you have Lamar Jackson, your team is going to be one of the best rushing teams in the league. But when you add Derrick Henry to it, it just adds a whole nother element that takes pressure off of Lamar in a way that I think he kind of needed for some of these games, just to get back into it. Because as much as we love Lamar, we talked about it. I'm sure we talked about it last year with the Chiefs game, the AFC title game. I know we talked about it this year after the first game they lost to the Steelers. He has these moments where he starts pressing and it's not good, you know, because he has the talent to do.
You know when it's coming too.
Right? You know when it's coming too, right? Right? Yeah. And in that Steelers game, they got out of sync early. Derrick Henry had the fumble. And you were just like, oh man, this is about to be one of those games. And it was. And they were just all out of sync. But then you kind of start to figure out, like, okay, what are we good at? We run the ball well. So you come out against the Steelers, your first playoff game, after you kind of jumbled it last year. You're calling RPOs, but he was still holding the ball in his hands and it wasn't quite working. No. We ran the ball 18 times with Derrick Henry on first down. We got 150 yards and 2 touchdowns. That's the meat of it right there. And I know that Buffalo's defense, I think they've gotten a little bit better, but it's also in the territory of the Lions that we talked about before. I don't know if I care, because I don't think that even the Ravens off the line is a great unit, but you have Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson, and that's such a trump card. And even then, with if you look at outside of that, some of these guys aren't great, but there's just like physics that end up happening. When you put a 380-pound guard in Falale behind, you know, you have a 300-pound fullback in Ricard Bynum, and you're handing the ball off to a 6'3", 250-pound running back, that hurts. It's just hard to, it's hard to slow that down physically every single play. And I just hope they come out and just smash it again. Like, whatever the haters say about throwing the ball, that is fake. It doesn't matter. It's not real. What matters is hoist that Lombardi trophy. And how you get there is by spamming the ball and absolutely crushing teams on the ground.
It's the ability to pivot. Like, that's what you have to do. And everyone has a fastball or a major that they want to do. It's the ability that you don't suck at the other things. You're at least competent. It's like, yeah, we're a run first team, but when we do throw, we're at least competent. You're not garbage. That's playoff football. It's like, you have to be able to do a lot of things well. Just in case, because these game plans get so hyper specific and so hyper focused, just like in a general thing, like me as a former quality control coach, every coaching staff back in the day, until we got more data, it was that if I'm playing a team in week 8, I'm looking at the 4 previous games and any previous matchups we had against those teams. And that's what we would break down, and because that's what most recent what they're doing. Now, once you get to the playoffs, these staffs look at all 18 games or 17 games plus the playoff game. Then it's not just 7 red zone plays I'm looking at for my cut up or 14. It's every single one. Yeah, it's more work, but then these good staffs and the good coaches go, and this is why we're talking about the Chiefs at the top of the show. This is what they do so well, is go, okay, every time you're in that formation, we have this check. Every time you're in that formation, it gets so stuff you wouldn't do week to week, but you can do it for 1 week. You can do these calls for 1 week, and just for 5 plays, you know, the investment is worth it. So that's why it's like, for me, it's, I have to see what the game plan is for the Bills, because like you said, a lot of this is just physics. Once you get to cold weather, the physics of size matters more than speed or other things. You know, tackling hurts, blocking hurts. But if you're big, it's just math. It's just that I'm able to be bigger than you. Zach Lowe talked about it with defenders in the NBA. He says size is the great equalizer. I say pass rush, but that always sticks with me with football. Is size is the equalizer. Yeah, you're fast, but what if I could just barrel over you? Yeah, but when it's cold and everyone is moving 80% or 70%, okay, well, then the speed goes down, size stays the same, you know? So like, and that's why this matters for these games. It's the irony of getting two guys from Florida to be a cold weather team is not lost upon me. To get Lamar Jackson, Derrick Henry to be the cold weather guys is pretty, pretty funny. But I just think they have a lot of, again, natural answers. The Bills want to be in nickel. They want to be with five DBs on the field every snap, and they'll match most of the time, even if the Ravens want to be in big, you know, big ball, which is what they're going to do. All right. Well, the Bills like to do, the Bills do have their linebackers back, which is the difference from the first week or the first time they played. The thing is, Matt Milano and whoever else they want to put at linebacker, they're not like 250 pound pluggers. They're 220. You know, they're going to have to take on Patrick Ricard blocks. Like, you know, that it's just, again, it's physics of it. Even if they're really good players, then even like coverage wise, Bills run a lot of cover two and they run a lot of split safeties. Lamar is phenomenal against cover two and split safeties. First in EPA, second in air yards per attempt, because he launches that. There's no checkdowns for Lamar. Lamar is throwing digs. Lamar is throwing benders. Lamar is throwing hole shots. That's why he's awesome. First in yards per attempt, fifth in success rate. Bills are on split safeties a bunch, fifth highest rate in the NFL. So again, it's just a lot of stuff that the Bills want to do. The Ravens can just go, okay, we'll pound the rock and then drop back, and Lamar is going to launch the ball to kind of take you out of those looks. Having said all that, Bills have shown that they're willing to get a little funky with their game plans in these big games. So what kind of wrenches they throw, I'm very curious, especially on passing downs, third and fourth down. They got the linebackers back. Do they try and play base with three linebackers? They don't usually do it, but it's playoff time. You can do different stuff in playoffs. So it's more a conundrum for the Bills defense than anything for the Ravens offense, is how I want to kind of put it. The other side of the ball, though, very juicy. Bills offense, Ravens defense, two very good units. What grabbed your attention first on this side of the ball?
Well, first of all, I do think this will definitely go better. I think this will go better for the Bills than the first time they played these teams.
Yeah, I agree.
Right. But I also feel like the Ravens, they still do match up well to me. And which is fun.
I'm glad you're saying this, because these are kind of the same conclusions right. I came to. So,
which is fun, because then you get into more of the isolated Josh Allen, go be a hero, and he can do it moments, which is always compelling and captivating, just from like watching the sport and being like, holy crap, these guys are so good at this one particular thing. Rule breakers. But you start matching it up, the Bills run the ball really well. James Cook has developed into like awesome in between the tackles runner, power guy, like can break tackles, can run away from you. Like it really feels like he is developed into the full package. I don't know who the Bills running backs.
As a Georgia fan, are you upset about that?
No, I'm not, because I was unreasonably high on him. I felt like when he came into the league, and then when he got here, I was just like, he's all right. And now he's actually pretty good. Yeah.
He's good. Yeah.
Yeah. Whoever Bills running back coach is, that guy deserves a raise. Like, he's been great. But Ravens run defense, like that's where they consistently been great all season, defending the run. I think even at one point they were like 49% on third and short conversion rate, which is like you're as a defense are coin flip on third and short. You're doing a lot of things right.
That's crazy good.
Yeah,
yeah.
So that part, even though James Cook and the Bills offensive line, they can really push it. They can run the ball. That's still going to be a tough matchup for them, where I would be surprised if they're totally able to just run all over them like they did Denver last weekend in that playoff game. And one thing that kind of stuck with me from the first game was the Ravens cornerbacks, especially Marlon Humphrey in that game, like they just smothered the Bills receivers. They couldn't get anything going. And I still feel like that overall talent matchup is still in favor of the Ravens, especially now that one thing that's changed for them is Nate Wiggins is a much bigger factor in this defense than he was in the first game. And now he's on the field. So if you can continue to get Marlon playing at the level he's been playing and Nate playing at the level he's been playing, that is a tough matchup for the Bills wide receivers to get open against. And I feel like we're talking about kind of not to the same degree, but the Chiefs offense versus Texans defense, where it's like, we have some of these advantages against things you like to do, but we still have 17 back there, right? And that's going to be the thing. So I don't know if they, you know, maybe try to pull some fast ones by running some quarterback sweeps, by trying to get Josh on the edge and maybe get them to slow up and think about what's coming. But you're going to need some curveballs using like his very specific talents to, I think, get past the Ravens defense. But I'm never going to say Josh Allen can't do something, you know, even if it looks difficult, he's earned my respect and he's just too damn good.
I know. And we've talked about, I mean, Bills offense, the run game's really cool. They'll pound their way with the rock. Like everything you just talked about, they'll get under center. Really like the run game. Like they, I think the Ravens are slightly better, but it's kind of a nice even matchup there. But it's one of those where it's like, okay, you can't just be the Bills and just pound the rock over and over and over and have your way with it like they did last week against the Broncos. And then just other things, like I kind of was looking at, it's like, all right, man coverage. Okay, do they have an advantage with like Dalton Kincaid? Like who are they? Well, Kyle Hamilton is who covers tight ends. So that's out of the way. I don't care what tight end it is. That's like, all right, that's not great. And then you brought up Nate Wiggins, who's been great as a rookie and looks like a future Pro Bowler, actually. Humphrey's been amazing in the slot. And then they put Ardarius Washington as the back safety. And he's not great in coverage, but he'll come up and hit somebody. And that's what's curious to me, too, is like, can the Bills try and get him isolated? Because the weaknesses of the Ravens defense, they have a strong front seven, but the defense, the weakness when you're throwing against them is Washington, or Darius Washington, Roquan Smith over the middle of the field, and then Brandon Stevens, who lines up on the offense's left, the other corner. And I kind of was watching this. I was like, man, Stevens kind of lets up a lot of big plays. I wonder if that's just my eye test or just something else. Oh boy, strap in, Charles. Brandon Stevens is the second most targeted defender in all of football, not just DBs. Ooh, just period.
That's fine.
Okay. He is allowed the second most total EPA as the closest defender in coverage among all NFL defenders this season. 11th worst success rate allowed among all corners. Second most yards allowed among all defenders, and tied for 10th most yards allowed per target. So if you see Josh Allen throwing left a whole bunch, there's a reason, because that, again, that's the mouse in the house. That's the guy you're picking at. I'm curious if they just go the whole, you can do these things. You can make the scheme to aim left. You just have to be very cognizant of how you do it. And I even looked at, because they have the left-right splits, throws to the left of the hashes against the Ravens, 31st in explosive pass rate allowed, 30th in EPA per dropback allowed, 19th in success rate, right of the hashes. I love when I get to do this. 16th in explosive passes allowed, 13th in EPA per dropback, 3rd in success rate. So good defense. If you throw right, we can get after you if we throw left. So I'm curious. That's one thing that they can maybe find a true, true advantage. Wish we had maybe a top tier receiver to talk about it, to like say, take advantage of that. But there is a path there that they can maybe go against there. And like you said, it's to me, it's Josh Allen, go do something funny. Like it's, and then that's other things. Ravens are really good against scrambles. So it's like, all right, well, take that out. You know, Josh Allen's going to find a way. He always does. But again, it's just a lot of, the Ravens have a lot of answers for what the Bills are going to try to do. But I think it's going to be really fun. Nice little slugfest on this side.
I guess we'll see if Amari Cooper makes a difference in this matchup. But for him. He's been pretty up and down, I feel like, this season.
Yeah. Can Coleman do something? Yeah, I know. They also, the Ravens are doing a little dime. Tre'Davious White's getting out there. Notice that. And it's Washington has, or Darius Washington has done a nice job. But there's a reason he was a special teamer his whole career. And the Ravens coaching staff knows that because you will never see him manned up on anybody. He's either the deep safety or they'll run like two invert and he's the middle, like roamer guy, robber guy. Never isolated on anybody. So I'm curious if the Bills try and they're like move guys around, shift motion, try to get that DB down there to cover somebody because there's a reason the Ravens are trying to hide him. So this game, though, Chuck, Ravens are 1-point favorites on the road. They handled them in the first matchup. What is your prediction?
I think they win again. I think you ride Derrick Henry, ride just enough defensive stops where you can score and get out of there with a win and go fight your fears in Kansas City once again.
This is going to be right. No, this is going to be a battle. I'm excited. Two awesome quarterbacks. I'm going to side with the Ravens too. I just think. I think the Ravens defense, Bills offense is pretty evenly matched. You know, maybe Ravens with a slight advantage, but they still, Bills still have Josh Allen. I just think that the Ravens offense has an advantage of the Bills defense. Even if the Bills defense has some nice things, I think they'll need some turnovers, which they might get. But that, again, it's just one of those things where I think the Ravens have good answers there. So I'm going to go with the Ravens as well. All right. That was it for our 3.5 deep dives plus a Haas fight. We'll call it like that. But make sure to submit a review on Apple Podcasts, and you can jump to the front of the line or send an email to football301mailbag@yahoosports.com. We will get to a bunch of these questions soon. Don't you guys worry. We only got a couple more weeks of this. So you know, we're going to be hitting these questions a lot coming up. But closing it out today, Charles and I will be back on Sunday with the fifth quarter to recap all four of these games. I am Nate Tice. You can find me at Nate_Tice on Twitter and Nate Tice on Blue Sky. Charles, where can they find you?
You can find me at Four Verts on Blue Sky. We've done a whole bunch of work this week. If you're interested in the Cowboys search, our co-workers, Charles Robinson and Jory Epstein, have done a bunch of work on that this week. So give it a read, give the underdog column a read, and take it easy on Friday because we're going to war this weekend.
We are. And then we got Monday night college football final. Yeah. We got a good
big weekend coming up.
Strap in.
Some other things happen on Monday too. So, you know.
Some other things. Yep, some other things.
Like the first Monday without Monday Night Football this year. You know?
Oh, it's a big event. Yeah. Hey, at least we got college to fill it in for the 1 week without. Yeah, big day on Monday. But no, thank you guys all for listening. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy the playoffs. Thank you to Madison and Stone behind the scenes. Make sure to subscribe, follow us, rate us, watch us on YouTube on the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. Again, thank you for listening. See you guys on Sunday.